The cross is something, and here's I think this is critically important to note, that the cross is a call to experience, to imbibe Jesus. You know, the gospel is a call to imbibe Jesus through a participation in his experience through his passion and his resurrection.
Welcome, everyone, to the Faith Recovery Podcast, where we are seeking to recover faith.
Yes.
By recovering the faith, recovering the gospel faith. I'm Kent.
I'm Nathan.
And we're in a series called The Voice of the Shepherd. We're seeking to discern the voice of the one who died and rose again in daily life, in the trials and tribulations and decisions we face and opportunities we have here in life. And we're picking one topic after another. Today's topic is physical fitness. So we talked about managing money. I guess that was last week.
Yeah.
And now we're going to talk about managing our bodies.
Yeah. Yeah. And probably a broad topic, you know. Physical fitness can mean different things to different people.
Maybe we're going to include taking care of our bodies for our health, managing our health.
Yeah. But also body image. I think that
Image. Yeah. Well, there you go. That too.
Yeah. And just our concern for how we look and things like that. It's all wrapped up. I don't know. Did you ever watch the show House? Speaking of me watching too much TV.
House. Yeah. No. I know the name. I don't know the show.
That. Yeah. Don't. That's all right. You don't need to start it. It's good though. But it's an older show from like the 2000s, way back in the 2000s and 2000 and
the aughts.
Yeah. Right. The aughts. And so it stars Hugh Laurie as this, you know, grumpy drug addicted genius doctor, right? Who always finally solves the, you know, the puzzle of what's going on with somebody's health. And so they have this this young woman who's like a fitness instructor who falls out or whatever. You know, that's how it always begins, with somebody's doing the thing in their life and then they just kind of fall out or, you know, something happens. And so, and they're, you know, they're doing all this stuff to try to figure out why she fell out, right? Because she's a fitness instructor, you know, why would she fall out? And they found some old pictures of her, and she's really heavy in the old pictures, and they find out she's had bariatric surgery, and now they're really, one of the doctors particularly is kind of disgusted with her, saying, you know, she's basically lying to people, telling them that they need to work harder and eat right and everything, but she herself has taken kind of what he sees as a shortcut to losing weight. And, you know, and she makes this case that, well, it's for her health, and that everything she's doing is for the health of her clients, and that if they're getting healthier, then who cares, you know, how she got here. And really, that's what it's about. It's not about body image, it's about her health.
This is not vanity, this is love.
Right, right. And then later we discovered that, no, it was actually the laparoscopic or the lap band surgery or whatever that she'd had. And
that caused her to fall out.
That caused her, you know, some systemic problem. And they said, you know, we'll just, you can be healthy again if you'll just reverse the surgery. And she's like, no.
You know, I'd rather die.
It was just really well written. Well, yeah. She wasn't going to die, but she was going to live very, you know, in a very kind of unhealthy life, you know, maybe have a shorter lifespan, but definitely have diminished overall health. So it's a really well written show where somebody is kind of given this choice between looking good and feeling good, right? And kind of unmasks this, because I think a lot of times people do, they talk about wanting to be healthy, but what they mean is they don't like the way their body looks.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So all that to say, it's all wrapped up. And I think to the point of a few episodes ago, you know, we have to learn to be honest with ourselves.
Now you're talking about episodes of our podcast,
Right. Okay. Yeah. Our own episodes, right? Yeah. Now we're solving the problem of the human heart, maybe like Dr. House.
Now, what did we say a few episodes ago?
We were just talking about the importance of personal integrity. I think it was when we were talking about marriage and LGBTQ matters, and how if we use the Bible to justify same-sex relationships, it's kind of, to my mind, more dangerous to our souls than perhaps the same-sex relationships themselves, you know? And so there's a personal honesty, I think, that's critically important. And So for whatever reason, if we are, if there's something about us that's just like, look, I don't like the way I look, and I wanna not look this way, and I'm gonna do a lot of work and take a lot of time and trouble and everything, and just admit it, you know, it's okay. Mm-hmm. And so that needs to be a part of the conversation, because I think in many cases in the U.S., especially, and maybe especially among white women, even more, I would say even farther. I mean, among everybody, but because of the body standards and things like that, I think that there are particular sections of our society that are more preoccupied with their size and their, you know, they would say it's their health, and health is certainly a side benefit, or maybe a primary benefit, with the appearance being secondary. But our society does definitely have a lot of pressure that it puts on, especially, like I say, especially white women. And I think I say that because there's been surveys made of women from various different ethnicities who don't have that same preoccupation with their body image, mm-hmm. you know, especially culturally, if they've come up in another culture. And doesn't mean you have to have grown up outside of the United States, but, you know, say African-American women growing up in maybe a predominantly African-American culture, mm-hmm. you know, where they're like having a little bit more meat on their bones is a good thing, mm-hmm. you know? And so they, maybe they're really proud of their body. And even mm-hmm. though it may be of a larger size than, you know, their BMI may be up from what we would say mm-hmm. we should, or Hispanic women, you know, having kind of this almost a bravado or something, you know, whereas, and it's probably a lot of it, even though our society's done a lot to change this, but for the most part, the archetypal woman in Hollywood, models, actresses, stuff like that, are white, mm-hmm. you know, and so maybe it's just that they have that to look toward, and they feel like they're falling short, even more so with Instagram. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, health is going to be largely about body issue. So I don't know how to tackle this. Maybe we should just dive in.
Yeah. There's stuff in the you know, there's if you think about the scripture in the New Testament, mm-hmm. there's a lot of references to the body,
yeah,
and to the flesh. Mm-hmm. Now, and the flesh is not just the body, but it's like the world system. It's like human living apart from God. Mm-hmm. So the flesh is not just a reference to the body usually, although occasionally I think he's just referring to the body.
Right.
So I mean, maybe we could start there. Is there some place where, did you have a passage in mind?
Oh yeah, I'm just trying to get there now.
Okay,
if I
Nathan's
can.
Gonna take us there.
Well, I'm looking it up, but yeah, I mean, I think that the flesh, the thing, you know, back in what was the 80s when the NIV just dropped the word flesh.
Oh, they said human nature or sinful nature?
Sinful nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, so sarx just strictly means the flesh, right? I mean, it's a Greek word for meat. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, kind of like carne or something almost. So, you know, sarcasm, for instance, comes from the word sarx. And it meant to fillet, right? So sarcasm, toderma, is like the flaying of the skin off of a person, mm-hmm. right? In Greek. I just remember that from my Greek class in college. You know, I don't know why that sticks, you know, random things stick in your head, but it has to do with very, you know, the actual material that we're made of, the muscles on our that hang on our body. So I think calling it sinful nature was an attempt to try to affirm the idea that creation is good. God created the body. Mm-hmm. And if we demonize our physical self, then maybe we've done something wrong, right? Mm-hmm. That we're miscommunicating. And I see that there's a whole interpretive science behind all of this stuff, and there's reasons, and people aren't trying to be evil, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever. but I think that when we see that in the scripture, if we don't refer to the body somehow, you know, if we don't retain that notion, we miss something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Paul and the writers of scripture, they're trying to locate a problem within the body. They're saying mm-hmm. there's a problem. Not that God made something bad, the body is good,
right.
but that there is a problem that pertains to the body, the way we think about it, the way we use it.
Right. Yeah. That there's an inherent mistrust, I think, from Paul on bodily desires, over bodily desires, that it need the, you know, that the body has a legitimate desires, but that those desires must be kept within confines. If they're not, they will proliferate and then begin to cause harm. So if we could think about desire as water in a stream, a channel, you know, now you don't want that stream to dry up, but drying up is better than having a flow way beyond what the channel can handle.
You know? Having a flood. Yeah.
Right. Because then that's going to change the direction of the channel. So let's just say God carved that channel and it, you know, it's traveling in these ways. John Oman, who's somebody you'll probably never read, and most people will probably never read, but he spoke of how, speaking of rivers and things like that, how God gets water from here to there, you know, if he wants to. He does it in a river with all of its winding and turning and oxbows and things like that, right? Whereas when people want to get water from here to there, they do it in a channel. And something's lost, you know. There's a story about how the Chinese government went in and they, you know, they needed some infrastructure change and they dug all these channels to try to get water diverted, you know, to places where it needed to be. But then that caused like the whole surrounding landscape to die because the water would just, it wouldn't slow down enough to actually nourish the font, you know, the flora and everything through that area. And so, and it caused, when everything died, it caused all of the sediment to rush into these channels. And just a catastrophe, right? Just because we think, well, let's get the expedient route. Let's go from here to there. All that to say, when desire overflows its banks, it causes a redirection of the stream, causes sedimentation, other things, right? Harm. So that, I think that's kind of how Paul saw it. It wasn't so much that he would affirm, hey, this is good. I mean, it is good. And I think that's assumed that desire, pleasure, you know, all of these are, I think, a gift from God, right? They can be a good thing. but it's, for Paul, he saw that there's a danger of a quantitative, you know, a quantitative indulgence in that that led to maybe a qualitative shift. So that if I decide that I enjoy sex, right? But if sex becomes its own thing outside of the overarching relationship, and it becomes a thing that I'm pursuing in and of itself and for itself, then it becomes detached from its, you know, the package that it was supposed to come in. Kind of like another analogy back to health, processed foods versus whole foods, right? So maybe you eat an apple for fructose. You know, our bodies are designed to need sugar. Fructose is a readily available sugar. And eating an apple is generally a good thing, right? But taking in high fructose corn syrup or things like that, you know, fructose by itself can be deadly. And so I think that's kind of what happens when desire becomes unmanaged and inordinate. So,
So the body isn't bad. The body's good. God, the desires of the body are made by God. The basic impulses are, the basic drives are there to be used and enjoyed for the love of God and for the love of people. Those waters spill over their banks. They become idols. They become our gods. And they ruin our lives and create a lot of harm.
Well, we know physiologically now that the neuroreceptors become desensitized. You know, our pleasure receptors. So there was a song the Guns N' Roses did called Mr. Brownstone. And there's a line in there I'll never forget. It's like, I used to do a little till a little got too little, then a little got more and more. You know? And that's just, that's the way the body is, that we have a finite capacity for pleasure. You know? And so something that maybe... And in the case of drugs and heroin and stuff, then that's something that's definitely just assaulting our pleasure centers. And so we have something that we call a high, right? And a lot of people say that that first heroin high, when somebody takes that, that they're, it's never as good from then on. Mm-hmm. And so people are always trying to chase that first high again, which is mm-hmm. why it becomes so destructive, because we readily develop a tolerance to those sorts of drugs, you know, and then have to take more until someone overdoses and dies, right? Mm-hmm. I guess that's why fentanyl exists, because people develop a tolerance to opioids, and so we have a synthetic opioid that's, you know, 100 times more powerful or whatever, just to mm-hmm. get that. But I'll have to say, now, if I sit down and I... Back to health. If I sit down and I, what do you think causes more serotonin? Okay, a vegetable tray or a wing tray?
Wing tray all the way, baby.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So a person who is living on vegetable trays, they're getting, you know, just a little bit of serotonin, you know, maybe just from the fact that they're not starving, or maybe they really like ranch dressing, you know.
Yes, the ranch.
Because that's a good thing. Yeah. But our bodies are telling us, hey, have more fats, have more carbs. Right? Uh-huh. Our bodies they're wired to have more fats and more carbs mm-hmm. because they want us to live. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so they're going to, you know, our bodies are designed to reward us for having fats and carbs. You know, they're just like, get more of that, mm-hmm. find more of that, mm-hmm. right? You're digging through the woods and you've been eating, you know, you've eaten 8 grubs and you come upon a blueberry bush. And your body's like, well, the grubs are okay, but let's hang out here a while, mm-hmm. you know, if you're foraging. Okay, so... But as, you know, we have ingenuity and everything like that, we've gotten to where we can do the British baking show.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So now we have a lot of endorphins, uh-huh. you know, available to us through these foods.
As the water overflowing its banks.
Right.
We have access to copious amounts through the day.
Right. Yeah. So from a health standpoint, and, you know, I think that with the gospel, if we understand it, the gospel is an affirmation, I think, at its base. You know, we really want to get to this essential, the essential threads maybe that are running through the gospel. Mm-hmm. There are particular components that are unavoidable when you hear that story. And then those components, I think, and the process of living by the gospel is generalizing those essential components outward into life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they have to remain small, because only then are they generalizable. You know, they have to remain at the source, at the headwaters, back to this kind of this river analogy, or we're not going to be able to apply them. You know, and that's why it's so critically important that we don't make prescriptives a part of the gospel, because those are the result of somebody else's circumstances as the gospel is spoken to it. And maybe their circumstance is not the same as mine. And they have to give me room to apply those, things.
So what is it that's in the gospel that's this core idea that applies here?
Right. I would say it's self-denial.
Self-denial. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that seems like it's at the core. So if we are to look to the cross, and the cross is something, and here's... I think this is critically important to note, that the cross is a call to experience, to imbibe Jesus. You know, the gospel is a call to imbibe Jesus through a participation in his experience through his passion and his resurrection. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that may seem obvious to some, but if you look at the health and wealth gospel, you see a readily obvious aberration where someone sees the gospel as the good news about why I don't have to suffer mm-hmm. because somebody did it for me.
Right.
Right. And so, yeah. But that misses the point. You know, if the gospel is the call to have, you know, pleasure and comfort and goods at the expense of Christ's death, and maybe all of that makes me thankful, mm-hmm. right? We're back to some sort of a religion where Jesus and I are never really going to be in fellowship, nor would I want fellowship with him.
Because fellowship with him is fellowship in his sufferings, in, as Paul said, in order to then partake in his resurrection, his life.
Right, right. So to be united to him, to be with him, to be in him, is the treasure. It's the thing that we're indulging in. You know, one of my favorite psalms, which happens to also be a messianic psalm, is Psalm 16. You know, Lord, you are my portion and my cup. You've made my lot secure. And then it goes on to say that you will not abandon me to Sheol, nor will you suffer your Holy One to undergo decay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then obviously the people who are preaching the gospel are like, well, who didn't undergo decay? You know, mm-hmm. whose body didn't rot? Well, there's only one person, mm-hmm. you know. So, but there is this affirmation that he's the treasure, that there's nothing in this world that is worth more than him. And I think that's why this reminder is what we need, to be honest, that what I need. Because mm-hmm. the world is full of opportunity, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And all of this stuff may feel good. So buying a new thing is going to feel good for a moment. Mm-hmm. You know, eating some
Oreos,
you know, exotic dish or, yeah, mm-hmm. some maybe pedestrian dish.
You're like, I wasn't going to go there.
Yeah. I am kind of a foodie, but also, you know, I'll eat what's there. All of that those are pleasurable things. And there's no attempt in scripture or anything else to say it's not. It's just that it's passing, you know, but it's also potentially dangerous. We have to be aware of it. So I think the gospel would replace that with suffering as a gift, you know, and also a means toward a greater pleasure, a greater reward, a lasting reward. Mm. I think those are wrapped in the gospel.
Self-denial.
Yeah.
That was all coming out of the point. Self-denial is the key idea from the gospel that then has application to this question about health and fitness.
Right. So I think I can't think of much in scripture about health and fitness. You help me. I know it's scant. Right?
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. Not, I mean, I can immediately think of that place where Paul says physical training is of some value, but godliness is of greater value because it has a reward in the next life.
Yeah.
So he's saying, yeah, you know, there's some value mm-hmm. in physical training.
Right. Yeah, physical exercise or whatever, right? And I don't think he's actually affirming the value of physical exercise so much as he's just juxtaposing it with
right.
the value of godliness, which, you know, is spiritual exercise, right? And, you know, participating in a worshipful experience toward God, uh-huh. praying, just, you know, being a godly person uh-huh. is somebody who's engaging in this ongoing dialogue with God, being aware of him in their life. Right. Worshiping him with their goods and with their time in these kind of ways we've talked about, as you love your brother and, you know, all these other ways, and perhaps even fast, right?
There's some negatives, like in the Proverbs, you know, like this vain, this beautiful woman, beauty is fleeting. Mm-hmm. So there's some criticisms of emphasizing beauty.
Yes.
Right, and in somewhere in Peter, he says, you know, there's something similar about how don't adorn yourself with gold and mm-hmm. jewelry, but with godliness.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Great. Great passage, man. That's a really telling one. But yeah, and I think you know, he's writing to a young man, to Timothy. You know, younger people are more concerned about their appearance than older folks. You know, we don't have as much potential, I guess. Like you know. Jaden and I have been going to the gym, and I'm the oldest person there. I mean, by a long way. Like, what am I doing here? You know, if it wasn't for him, I definitely wouldn't be there. If it wasn't for him, it's like
you should go to the old folks gym like I do.
Yeah,
Center for Exercise, man.
Fit okay, right if your gym starts with Center Four, you're old.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, young people, right? So there's this concern, and it gets back to, like we were talking about last time, about the dangers of trying to become wealthy.
Yeah. Here are the dangers of trying to become beautiful.
Right. That a pursuit of a thing has so many hazards, because you know, Paul says in Colossians 3, you know, keep your eyes, your mind on things above, right? Mm-hmm. Where God, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Mm-hmm. And it's everything's about where our mind is pointed, you know, where our affections lie, mm-hmm. our longing, our desire, our aspiration. That's everything, right? What was it, Proverbs? It's like guard your heart because they're in like the streams of life, mm-hmm. right? So there's this direction that is critical, and the aspiration is inherently dangerous. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. once I begin to daydream about a make and model of car, mm-hmm. you know, or some personal goal in my appearance or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's a sin. I'm just saying I'm beginning to take a shift. I'm not trending in a positive direction.
Yeah.
So, but I think those who are redeemed should be able to notice that in themselves and in each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about the mindset on the flesh versus the mindset on the spirit, and learning to recognize what is a fleshly thought versus what is a spiritual thought. Yeah,
right.
And you're pointing out these are fleshly thoughts. You know, they're so much part of our culture. I've got to get in shape. I got to look better. That we don't recognize that's of the flesh. That's this world's system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can triangulate someone's next 10 years if you listen to them talk. You know. And if that doesn't change, uh-huh. What it is that they get worked up about, you uh-huh. know, what it is they're passionate over, what it is that dominates their diction, you know, the words that are, their obsession uh-huh. is their destination, uh-huh. you know. And if that obsession isn't Christ, then they're probably trending in a bad way, mm-hmm. and certainly not growing mm-hmm. spiritually. And I've wondered about that before, because I've thought, man, if I have this one obsession, how can I possibly be a well-rounded, healthy individual? You know, I would think God would want that for me. I don't know. Mm. What do you think? How can you be if you just say? Well,
you mean like if I'm obsessed with health?
No. Well, I'm saying if you're obsessed with any one thing, you know, a well-rounded person doesn't become too absorbed with any one thing, I would say. Mm-hmm. Common wisdom would say that a well-rounded person is able to focus on various things and have a balance.
Whatever the task at hand is.
Yes.
Whatever the need of the moment is.
Yeah. Or they're able to say, look, I need to be physically healthy. I need to be mentally healthy. I need to be fiscally healthy. I need to be relationally healthy. And I'm going to do X, Y, Z, you know, and AA.
Are you talking about a healthy, balanced approach? Like, you know, are you, according to the world's wisdom?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, are you criticizing this, or are you saying this is real?
How are things going to work out if everybody has to have the same singular obsession?
Oh, right. Well, our culture presses in upon us to really just be singularly focused on how we look.
Yeah.
And then I think it is kind of emerging, increasingly, there's a new emphasis in our culture on health, living to 100, living forever. You know, mm-hmm. the new science is seeming to really press that the rich and famous, at least, or at least the rich, can really tweak their health to be optimal for a really long time. And there's a growing emphasis on that.
Sure.
And that includes how you look, because they're interrelated.
Right.
But yeah, I would say beauty and health mm-hmm. are becoming even stronger, more dominant gods in our society right now.
Sure. Well, of course, those people you're speaking of have already become fiscally healthy.
Yeah, right.
You know, at least by the world's standards.
They've already done that. They focused on that the first part of their life.
Right.
Now they can focus on beauty and health.
Right, yeah. Well, I think about Elon Musk. You know, there for a while, he got kind of heavy. And there's memes about him, uh-huh. you know, about the little guy inside the robot. And
right.
I don't know if you saw that. There's like a meme. It was a cutaway of him standing there, and they did this thing. And there's like this little...
Yeah, he's just eating junk food trying to run his company, right?
Right. I mean, his life advice is work 100 hours a day because no one else is going to, and you'll get ahead. And uh-huh. I mean, and I'm sure that comes out of his own experience. Uh-huh. And if you work 100 hours a day, it's hard to be thin. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to be in shape in our culture. I mean, the standard American diet, acrostic SAD, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to... If you just eat what is convenient in our society, you're going to be overweight. Mm-hmm. You're not, and consequently, probably right. not healthy. So I'm sure he responded to that, you know, and now he's not.
Right.
He's not heavy. So, but he had to take some time from work, right, to then do some sort of exercise so that he would not be heavy, because there's a social cost to him. So he had to find a balance.
Mm-hmm. And he wants to live forever. Yeah. So they can run his companies forever.
Well, sure. I mean, especially if you don't believe in any kind of an afterlife, everybody wants to live forever. Mm-hmm. You know, the older you get, the farther back the idea of being old gets, you know, the faster time goes. You know, there's a real psychological effect that happens as you get older, that, you know, your brain is still young. You're like, how did this happen? Where was I for all this? You know, you start, you know, and so, you know, it's not this thing like, oh my gosh, how long have I been here? You know, I'm so old. You know, most of the time, most people who are getting old still feel like they're young. And they're like, when did this happen? And if it weren't for the, you know, undeniable facts of the matter, we would probably still not believe it, you know. So I don't know where I was going with that.
I'm trying to bring us back.
Yeah.
We're trying to apply the gospel to health and fitness.
Right. Yeah.
Self-denial is a key idea. Okay, right. So self-denial might work in a couple different ways here.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have in mind?
Yeah, well, I think those who authored the New Testament, because, you know, health is not mentioned that much. Some of it is, if you wanted to go anywhere, you had to walk. And, you know, we know that if you walk 10,000 steps a day, you're probably going to be relatively healthy, you know, and food's not as available, and the food you have is not as appealing, and, you know, it certainly doesn't have trans fats and stuff like that.
Right.
Deep frying hadn't been invented yet.
Yeah, Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, where he says, don't worry about your body, he didn't mean the problem we have today, worrying about how you look so much, as like staying alive and staying clothed.
Right. So the funny thing about it is that I think that the gospel has something to say about worrying about being too fat. You know, that if that becomes a preoccupation that we have, then we're fleshly, right? Mm-hmm. At the same time, it indicts the person who indulges their fleshly desires to the point that they become too fat.
Right. It kind of works both ways.
It does. Yeah. You know, I was getting to this notion of a singular obsession being healthy or unhealthy. So I guess what I'm saying is that, it, you know, if we, for Elon Musk, it, you know, seeking to be successful or to run his company or whatever it is that he's seeking led to an unhealth. So there's an imbalance that happened in his schedule and then was corrected later, still successful and healthy. But what we would say is that people should have a balanced life. People should be able to have time for the things that are important. They should remain healthy even though they work hard, and they should attend to their relationships and find a way to distribute that time in a way that's healthy. And if anybody has an obsession that dominates their thinking throughout the day, maybe that person is unhealthy.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. That to have a singular obsession is potentially dangerous. But if our obsession is Jesus, and this gets back to this notion, is that he's the one healthy obsession, and maybe that's a faith proposition.
Mm-hmm.
But just to the point that pleasing him, serving him, being in fellowship with him means denying myself or keeping those desires within their confines, okay, means that this other thing, this ancillary thing, my physical fitness and my health, is going to be taken care of.
Yeah.
You know, ideally.
Yeah.
You know, that if I'm seeking him, if I'm chasing him, and maybe it's not the pursuit of spiritual health apart from him. If I do that, then I've already lost focus.
Yeah.
But if I focus on him, if I focus on fellowship with him, and the promises that he's given me, you know, because Peter in 2 Peter, he says that you, through these promises, have been made partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that's in the world through lust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you escape the corruption of the world. So I'm thinking about a couple of different responses to this. One is like a hype. One response could be, are you saying if I love Jesus, then all I care about is the afterlife, and then I won't care about this life, and then I won't take care of myself, my bodily self? And I'm sure that does happen.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, of course, not what you're saying.
No.
You're saying a day-by-day walk with Jesus, and where he is regulating, moderating. Love for him and his love for you is regulating and moderating your bodily appetites.
Right.
And you're practicing self-denial.
Right.
Which will help your bodily health.
Right.
But you're not going to fixate on your bodily health.
Right.
You're fixating on Jesus.
Right. Yeah. If we fixate on any of the ancillary benefits, then we begin to exploit Jesus for the sake of our own progress. We say, well, I need to find enough impetus to do this, so I'm going to say I'm doing it for God. You know, I've known people who fast, but they were also fat. And maybe that's okay if you're like, well, I obviously have been indulging my flesh and I'm repenting now. And part of repentance for me is just to focus on the Lord and to pray and just to kind of detox from food. Maybe, you know, that's a good thing if you're focusing on Him.
Yeah.
But some people just conveniently decided they're going to be really godly in terms of fasting.
Right.
But also they're really, when you hear them talk, they're always on another diet. They're always thinking about how they can lose the weight. It's troublesome to them to be heavy. They don't like it. And it gets to a vanity component.
Yeah. It's checking your motives. It's being aware of what's going on. What's really going on in you. What are your true motives?
Right. And so there, you know, there's an honesty thing. And so that's the challenge. But I think for ourselves personally, I mean, we shouldn't want anything to get in between us and Him. And we should be alarmed and alerted if there's something that is. And any of these things can, and they do, whether it's a concern about, you know, how I look and my image, or whether it's a pursuit of pleasure inordinately. And, you know, there are some people and who are just physiologically heavier than others. You know, there may be somebody, I mean, and there have been godly people through the ages, you know, Spurgeon and Moody, both very heavy guys, you know, who that was just, you know, their lifestyle. They'd gotten to a place where things were more sedentary, their behavior and stuff, you know, what they'd done. Very difficult to maintain a good BMI if you don't do a lot of physical activity. And for them, they didn't feel compelled to do it. And I'm sure God's not like, oh, I wish you could have made it into heaven, but, you know, it's too bad, right? So, you know, a waist is a terrible thing to mind. A waste is a terrible thing to mind, and a mind is a terrible thing to waste.
I guess now I get it.
Just because it does get back to kind of focusing on self and vanity and things like that. At the same time, it's okay if we miss a meal or something, you know. And I think it's unlikely that someone who is obeying the gospel is going to end up on 600-pound life. It's on Discovery Channel. It's unlikely that someone who's obeying the gospel is going to be standing greased on a stage in a Speedo.
Right. both ends are the both are the extreme ends of a pursuit that is not Jesus.
Right. And so that's, when you remember the Power Team?
Are those the guys who broke things in the power of God?
Yeah. For Jesus, right? Yeah. But they're all these really big, you know, muscle guys, right? There was this thing, you know, in the 90s, I guess, late 80s or 90s through the early 2000s, where Jesus was so cool and the audiences were readily available, so that whatever it is you were into, if you didn't make it in the mainstream, you could go on the church circuit, you know, and put on these events, you know. So I doubt the Power Team, you know, maybe the Power Team. It's like if you have a thing that you do, and then at the end you give a gospel presentation or whatever. I mean, they're clearly not doing these things in the power of God, right? You know, I always wondered, was Samson like this little skinny shrimp? You know, we always draw him as this super jacked dude. I don't know what he looked like, but I'm saying if somebody is 250 pounds of straight muscle and they can tear a phone book in half, I'm not as impressed. You know, I'm certainly not like falling down on my face going, surely God is among you. You know, that was a result of a lot of work in the flesh, you know, and some trickery that certainly was employed. So that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about, where we have kind of this religious profession over something that really is not the gospel at all, you know, and that can happen. I think there's a lot of I don't know, biblical fitness ministries out there.
Kind of like the Dave Ramsey money management thing, kind of putting a Christian veneer over like worldly principles of money management.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess there's a similar thing with health and fitness.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we're doing aerobics, but we're doing it to worship music. You know, it's like, well, there's nothing wrong with aerobics and stuff like that. Especially as you get older. And I think there's a pragmatic sense of, for instance, not wanting to be a burden on your adult children as you get older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, to me that's a gospel aspiration.
Yeah. Or wanting to be mobile because you enjoy getting outdoors and
right.
you want to continue to enjoy it.
Yeah, and I mean mentally and things like that. So long as the Lord has us here, there's certainly utilitarian value to mm-hmm. being fit, not necessarily skinny, but having enough aerobic activity that your brain isn't, you know, diminishing faster than it has to, than mm-hmm. your capacity to actually do and to go and to carry a burden or whatever mm-hmm. is not diminishing before it has to. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I would think that would be an expectation. But I think the critical thing to remember is that any of these goals detached from following Him, you know, that He is the one healthy obsession, that I can be sure that if I focus on Him, if He is my goal, then everything will align behind Him. I think that faith includes that. Mm-hmm. And it may not align behind Him in a way that the world will like, or that if I'm being, you know, personally insecure or self-critical, I would agree with. You know, like if I focus on Him and He's my aspiration and my hope, mm-hmm. right? And what I want is fellowship with Him. I think the faith proposition becomes that within Him is everything I'm going to need for as healthy of a life as I need.
Yeah. All the money I need, all the physical health I need, everything I'm going to need, He's right. going to provide it. And that may include my having to participate and do some things mm-hmm. to earn some money or to take care of my body. But it's going to come from Him. And it's going to be balanced and healthy because it's from Him. It's not from my striving and right. from my flesh.
Right. Right. Well, and if He ever becomes peripheral, He's just in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what happens. Like I said, with the power team, He becomes peripheral, right? Mm-hmm. And when you try to make an overt nod to Him, a part of something where He's peripheral, it's almost insulting. Mm-hmm. To me, it feels really weird if somebody tries to draw Him back in when He, you know, mm-hmm. nothing about this, you know, like, hey, let's have a party for Jesus, you know, mm-hmm. but all the colors are my favorite colors, they're not His favorite color. The mm-hmm. food's my favorite food, it's not His favorite food.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, oh, let's call Him up here, you know, He's a jolly good fellow, and nothing about the night has been about Him, you know? You know, where is He? Where'd He go? You know, how rude. and I think that our lives can become like that. Mm-hmm. You know, where everything is really about me, but I want both. You know, the one thing I can't manage on my own is death. So, you know, He at least needs to be waiting in the wings.
Yeah, yeah. You're going to need Him. On that day.
Eventually, yeah. I mean, I don't care. I can prolong my life, but honestly, it's still so finite. And mm-hmm. that's what I was getting at. Mm-hmm. As we get older, mm-hmm. you know, you're not like, man, I'm really cheating death. You're like, oh, crap, here it comes. You know, no matter how yeah. healthy you are, it's still right around the corner. It's on yeah. its way. Mm-hmm. If you live to, you know, if you're very healthy and you're 90, you're not like, man, this is good. That's been long enough. I don't. Right. I've not met a 90-year-old who was in good health who was like, you know, this is good. I think I'm done. Mm-hmm. They're thinking, can I make another 10 years? You know, mm-hmm. there's always want more. So, mm-hmm. Jesus is always going to be needed. I think, you know, because nobody's ever going to feel like, you know, I really did it. High fives all around. I you know, I cheated death and now I'm ready to die. You know, you know, that physical fitness is ultimately always a failed enterprise.
Because mm-hmm. you can't cheat death.
You're never going
not
to.
Ultimately.
Yeah, at some point, your body is going to look real bad. It'll be skinny.
You'll be skinny then.
Yeah, but you won't be looking good, right? You're not going to be fat. You know, someday you're going to be skinny. So congratulations to all of you out there who struggle with your weight. And I promise you that someday you will be very thin. Your waist is going to be about 4 inches around. Congratulations. So anyway, yeah, physical fitness and health, it really, I think it has to do with where we're aiming. So in my life, as I've gotten older, you know, I don't really know. I don't want to be weak. I don't like needing help. And maybe that's me, you know. But we know that after about 45, you know, your body just doesn't build muscle as easily, begin to degrade. So should I do something about that or not? For me, I always have to have multiple motivations to do basically anything. So lately I've been going to the gym, eat, you know, more than I ever would. Of course, I never do anything halfway. I very rarely do things halfway. But I would not. Honestly, I don't know if I'd go if Jaden didn't want me to go with him, you know? So for me, I have to have, hey, time spent with my son. My son's asking me to help him do a thing. To me, this is, you know, a motive from the gospel in the sense of just loving my kid and stuff like that. But, you know, spending probably more time at the gym than a lot of people would, but I'm making up for lost time too. I don't know I've not yet found the balance, but I do know that focusing on him is the safest.
Yeah.
You know, and I do think it will, and, you know, to what I was saying earlier, it will keep us out of the ditches of, you know, being overly concerned with our appearance, which is unhealthy. And it's unhealthy for our relationship with him and our own personal self. But also, you know, the other side of the coin. And maybe we should spend less time, you know, with media. I hate to say that because I start with lots of references to you know, cultural media. But
I mean, because that continues to feed the mindset that I need to focus on my body because of what's in the media.
Yeah, well, you know, back when people had watched advertisement, I guess they still do watch commercials, you know. So you just constantly barrage with these very, you know, skinny, fit people almost unrealistically so. And then, you know, Sonic ad, and then, you know.
Oh, right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Two extremes.
Yeah. Pharmaceuticals, you know, like, of course you need these drugs, you know. and so the machine is, you know, it's eating us up and spitting us out.
It's pushing and pulling us all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's certainly, I think, something to be said for, you know, at least being aware that there is a, you know, financial mechanism that has an interest in us living a lower standard of life, you know, and maybe dying younger than we should or than we otherwise would.
Yeah. And that's the world, and that's this world system, right? It's pushing and pulling, and it's pushing us toward making an idol out of our bodies and making an idol out of food and pleasure. And so those are both part of the world system,
right?
That's messed up,
right?
Because it's godless,
right? But if it, back to 2 Peter 1, this, if our aspiration is Christ and him, then we're not susceptible to those messages so much, right? Because those messages are they're trying to evoke in us something, a sense of lack, something that we're missing, something we would be happier if we had. But if we are standing in Christ, we're centered in Christ, then those appeals don't work. So that's the hope. But if we're always subjecting ourselves to those appeals, we're going to be more susceptible to their pull, which it's that susceptibility that's the really unhealthy thing. You know, if I begin to just be like, I don't know if I, and it start really bothering me, and I start thinking about it, and I start, I just saw myself in the mirror as I was walking by, and it just really bothers me. That's what I need to repent of.
Yeah.
Not being fat, like, because I can't fix being fat right now, one, but also two, that thinking is where I've begun, you know. Maybe I was off toward the other ditch, that's how I got this way, but it's a preoccupation with my appearance and how I'm coming across in the world, that's, and that moment very dangerous.
Right. Yeah, that's the opportunity to turn back to God and His love and get focused.
Yeah. And just to be almost pushed back against it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, go put on something tight fitting and light colored with horizontal stripes. Take that, world standards. Go get that belly button ring. Yeah, baby. You know, but you know, I do think that if we get to a place where, especially, you know, our mobility is affected, our, you know, capacity is affected, then obviously we've been on the wrong track. I just don't, even on the standard American diet, you're not going to get to a place where you're basically incapacitated by your weight. You know, there will be people who are heavy in our society just because of what's readily available, lifestyles that we have. And I don't think we should have a body shape standard for people in the church. You know, we should be like, and I think, you know, to the previous point, having fitness ministries suggests that if you're fat, your God probably doesn't love you sometimes. You know, I know that we may say otherwise, but you know, fitness isn't wrong, but it's just like making a ministry out of it just seems like pasting a, you know, sticking a Jesus sticker on something that the world's already doing, you know. But all that to say, I think that there are good reasons, gospel-centered reasons to be healthy. I have yet to see anybody who has attended to their own physical fitness, their own appearance, who've made that a
priority,
who have at the same time made a lot of spiritual progress.
Yeah, it's kind of like you cannot serve both God and money.
Yeah.
Or like James says, you're double-minded. Friendship with the world can't be a friend of God.
Right.
You got to choose.
Right.
Got to choose, people.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to leave you with that thought. You can always email us if you want to follow up with us, if you'd like for us to discuss or address something that we didn't hit. Discussion at recoverfaith.org. Thanks. We'll see you next time.